la la, let me explain. Relationships, sex, hello and welcome to another Monday episode of It's Not You, It's Them, but it might be you with me, La La La, let me explain. And today, this is a really important episode that means a lot to me and that is a call to action for you guys. I want you to get to the end of this episode because you can really, really help. There is a trigger warning for this episode. It is all about the sexual abuse of children. But what really sparked it was that this week, or last week rather, I watched on Discovery Plus their five-part series, Quiet on the Set, which is all about Nickelodeon, which produced some of the highest grossing children's TV of the 90s and early 2000s. And many of those very high grossing shows were headed by a producer called Dan Schneider. And there have been loads of rumours over the years. This is what Quiet on the Set looks into. The culture of abuse on those sets on Nickelodeon in the 90s and 2000s. There were multiple sex offenders, actual paedophiles on the set who were abusing the young child actors. And I mean, the kids were completely unprotected. Parents' concerns were shut down. When people spoke about what was happening, the Nickelodeon staff just shut it all down and protected the abusers. You must watch Quiet on the Set if you can handle it. It's really interesting. Several of the abusers actually went to prison. Dan Schneider has always denied any allegations of wrongdoing. He's never been convicted of anything. But I think that the general thing that comes out of shows like Quiet on the Set is this idea that there is this shadowy group of figures in Hollywood and that this is a Hollywood thing, that there's these dangerous underworld people running big, you know, organized crime networks of paedophilia in Hollywood where every police officer, every social worker, or every judge, they're all in on it. It's some big organized shit. When actually, why it annoys me when people do that is that this is not some big organized Hollywood conspiracy. This is happening all over the place, in every town and in every city, in every area which gives powerful people access to children. And when I say powerful people, that doesn't have to be some big Hollywood actor. You're a powerful person if you are a football coach on a child's football team and those children are desperate to make it to the Premier League. In youth clubs, in churches, priests, imams, rabbis, private tutors, sports team coaches, stage schools, army cadets, orphanages, care homes, police. In any industry where you get access or power and you can potentially harm children, you are going to find this type of behavior. It's not a Hollywood thing. This is an everywhere thing. And unless we open our eyes to it and understand it, it will keep happening. So today I have brought on a guest. It's somebody who's actually very close to me. He's going to remain completely anonymous throughout this podcast. I've known this story for a very long time and it has been deeply frustrating to me because this is an ongoing story. We believe that there are children still being subjected or potentially still being subjected to abuse. So that's why today's episode is a call to action. We're going to tell you this story of my guest who is here today. It is a disturbing story of child sexual abuse, but we want you to listen because we believe it's still ongoing and we need to catch these people and we need to get justice, and you might well be able to help us. So hello.
Hi.
It's really weird seeing you here in this setting because we've been very close friends since, what, the early 2000s?
Yeah, 2003.
And it's been so powerful to see you sharing your story with the police and doing what you need to do to try to get justice for things that happen when you were a child. for the purpose of this podcast, you were a budding actor.
I was. I showed potential.
And you went to a number of different stage schools as a child.
I went to amateur dramatics groups and stuff from the age of 12.
And unfortunately, when you began, you met with a teacher who told your mum that you were extremely promising. And how did that begin? What happened with this teacher at
You
were 12, right?
I was 12. I was at a summer camp, a summer theatre school in the summer of 1995. And I was just in the background, you know, just a young, small boy, just messing around with one of my friends on the stairs. And I was just kind of like doing some weird little kicking thing as I was walking down the stairs. And the director of that show saw me doing the kicking thing and he said, "Wow, what was that move you just did? That was great. I really loved that. Show it to me again." And in my head, I was like, I don't know what I did. I haven't got a clue what I did. And I just did something else. And it was pathetic. But this guy was like, "Wow, that was great. You know, you should maybe get your mum to come in and have a chat with me. Tell your mum I want to have a conversation with her." And so off it went. And obviously I go home really excited and say, "Mum, I got spotted by the director today and he wants to have a conversation with you." And I bring my mum in and she chats to him and he says, you know, about where he works and what he can do and he could potentially bring me in and I should come round for an audition. And so it started like that. And I, within 2 weeks or whatever, so after the show, I was in his house doing a singing audition with my mum.
So he told your mum that you had to come around to his house so he could prep you for these auditions.
And to check if, you know, I really had talent. Mm. So I turned up at his house and did some singing with him by the piano and my mum was there and in this lovely house with all this kind of like fancy equipment and everything else and very show-offy. And then like basically the next week I was signed to the agency and then I was straight into the singing lessons and I went to singing lessons and speech and drama lessons and stuff like that. And I didn't think I paid for them at first. I think he got me in for free and was giving me the lessons. So that was kind of how it all began. And within that, I think my mum like took me up to the first lesson on the Saturday school. And then the next week it was like she dropped me at his house and I went in with him. So immediately I was with this man on my own in his house.
I guess traveling. She trusted him because he worked at the school. So she's assuming that because he's a
professional
and he's potentially been CRB checked or whatever. Yeah. Maybe they didn't even have that in the 90s. I don't even know.
Yeah. So immediately then it's like, okay, come back to his house after the Saturday, wait till the end of school, come back to his house after and all of that stuff and come and see a show with him and he'll take us to the theatre. So my mum left me in his company a lot.
With other boys as well?
There was another boy that I was with a lot, but there was a lot of boys in and out of his house all the time. I mean, there was up to 10 boys potentially in and out of his house daily doing singing lessons, singing lessons, piano lessons and yeah. So I was just there. She left me with him and I was just, she trusted him, you know, she trusted him that he had my best interests at heart and he saw something in me and he was going to navigate me through this.
And then how quickly did the abuse start?
Immediately. Oh, we'd be walking through, he'd take me into the West End and it was like, he'd gave us some booze around in the back alleys of Soho. And he took me to a peep show and he was talking like straight away. It was like, I'm your mate. You know, it was like, talk about sex. Let's just talk about sex straight away. Or, you know, have you had sex before? And he was like, "Oh, you know, the numbers on the walls in the toilets, that's young boys. That's how they're just trying to make money from having sex with older men and stuff." Like,
so he's trying to normalize the idea of sex as a kind of grown up fun activity and test the waters to see where you're
straight away
with that.
Straight away in his house, you know, on our own. And it's like, "Have you ever seen a porno before? Have you seen porn? I've got some pornos here. Should I put one on?" And, you know, he's like got a laser disc player and he's got like all DVD players. And this is when this stuff had just come out. Mm. Also, I'm with someone who is, first of all, pretending to be my friend. Mm. And secondly, who's pretending to be someone who knows about stuff and who can teach me about stuff.
Yeah. And then it turned into...
So immediately it was just like putting porno on. And I mean, within weeks, like put a porno on, you know, you can play with yourself if you want. you know, you can, don't be shy. I can leave the room. I'll leave the room if you want. And it was like, he was always so jovial and jolly and like, ha, 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 don't worry, I'll go get a box of tissues. And then he'll just like leave them next to you. And then he'd come back in with a tub of like fucking KY or whatever, you know, and leave it next to you, to the point where it was, oh, you don't mind if I do it too, you know. And, you know, you're just sitting in a room and this man has forced himself into a position where you're exposed in front of him. He's exposed in front of you. The next thing, he's like, oh, this is gross, standing over you and telling you how to do it. Yeah. I'm like trying to.
You don't need to go into detail.
Anyway, yeah.
I think this is why it's so important that we make sure that our children know that this is not monsters who do this. That this is that really kind person who's making you feel really good, who's giving you treats. It's so incredibly common, and this is why it's often really difficult to. For people to disclose sexual abuse is because it's not, oh, fuck you, get down, I'm holding you down, I'm a big nasty. It's gentle, it's kind, it's loving, it's, he's your friend. And I think that's why, that's how they get you. That is grooming 101.
I mean, the thing is that as a child or a young boy, young teenager, you don't see it as wrong.
Well, because it's insidious, it's slow. So if you'd have turned up on the first day you ever saw him, he pushed you against a wall and did a sex act to you, you would have known that that was wrong straight away. But when you're a kid, as I say, when you are being taught, this is my mate, this is what everyone does, I'm here for you, come on, all the other boys are doing it, your mum knows I'm safe, all of that stuff just leads you to, you're not supposed to know any better at 12.
No.
You're not supposed to know any different. Grooming is so effective. It is total brainwashing to get you into a place where you feel safe and confused as fuck. So even if you know, I don't like this, part of you feels, but I'm supposed to like this.
I mean, we say it's slow, but it's kind of not. It's like, it's almost like by the end of the conversation, you're exposed, you know. I remember being in that room and just being so scared. So scared, but not knowing how to respond, like being numb to it, just thinking, convincing myself this is normal. If he's doing this, then it's kind of, it's got to be okay.
Hi guys, it's me, and I'm here to tell you about another Sony Music Entertainment podcast. Now, I know you all like to have a deeper look and get under the skin of a subject. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to me deconstructing hot topics and getting into the nitty-gritty with all your dating dilemmas. So I think you're going to love Getting Curious with the fabulous Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye. Every week, they deep dive into conversations with a variety of experts on some really, really important and eye or ear opening topics like the history of abortion and the science of sleep. Get excited, get curious, and listen to Getting Curious wherever you get your podcasts. Is there anything, I know you didn't tell your mum at the time, but what, is there anything she could have picked up on when she was picking you up on those days? What could she have been looking out for?
I feel really sorry for my mum. It's really tough. She was in a position where she needed to protect me, but she wanted the best for me. And she was groomed too.
Yeah.
You know, she was 100% absolutely groomed by him too. I would turn up, come back to my house and find him sitting on my sofa. You know, he was there talking to my mum. Some days he turned up, I found him outside my school. At the end of school, we, like, he was just there. The reality was, is she just shouldn't have let me in his house
in the first on my place. Own.
That was what she should have done. There was no need for a boy to be in a man's house alone. There's no need for a boy to be staying over in another man's house. That's what she did wrong.
Yeah.
You know, she trusted him. And ultimately, that's the hardest thing of all, because that's what she did wrong.
Yeah.
And it just happened for years.
Yeah.
It went on for years.
At the time, my guests didn't report to the police or do anything because he didn't understand that what was happening to other people and that it was something that could be reported to the police. But unbeknownst to you at that time, it was going on, and two other boys did raise a case with the police. So there's an email actually from the police, which gives some description. So this paragraph describes sort of what happened next. Because a trial did happen, didn't it?
A trial did happen. So
can you read it out and just omit any names?
So in 1998, these men, they were both charged with 9 varying sexual offences against children between them. These included charges of possession of indecent images of children. They were remanded and the matter eventually went to trial. The trial involved 2 victims. It involved a vast number of prosecution witnesses, 20 in total, and there was over 1,001 pages of evidence. At the address, the police found 250 VHS tapes. These were all sent off for examination, and from the paperwork I've read so far, 30 VHSs were found to have indecent images of children on them. I was on those tapes. They had a fake bathroom cabinet, which they turned into a camera with a one-way mirror, glass, and a video camera behind it. They filmed boys in the shower. This fake cabinet was also seized. I would establish that these VHSs are still in police possession. Yeah. So they were caught filming children. And I caught them once with, I came into his house once and he'd set the chair up this time. You know, it was like the moment you walked into the house, it was like quickly shut the blinds, put some porn on. I came into the house once and he'd had the chair put right in front of the TV, like central, you know, and put porn on. And the next thing you know, I'm in a position and I notice in the corner of a room a camera pointing up at me. And I call him and I freak out. And I'm like, why is that there? Why is that there? I'm probably not angry or aggressive about it. I'm probably really scared about it and just quite calm and nice to him about it. And he's like, no, obviously, you know, it's not recording because there would be a red light on it, you know. You can switch the red light off. Like, they were filmy boys.
But let me just make that really clear from what you've read out. So 2 of their victims went to the police. It went to trial. Not only was the trial about the abuse that these 2 victims had suffered, but as part of that, the police also discovered 250 VHS, homemade VHS, and secret recording equipment in a cabinet where they'd been filming boys showering and using the bathroom. Despite having found all of this and taking it to trial, there was a hung jury. And what that means is that it was an instant not guilty, but that the CPS had the ability to order a retrial. We're not sure why there was a hung jury. But the CPS apparently decided that it wasn't within the public interest or in the interest of the victims to go through another trial again. They felt it would be too traumatising to the child victims to go through that trial again. And so essentially the matter was dropped. You told me, so when the perpetrators were arrested for this trial we just described, they immediately came to your house and threatened you and spoke to your mum?
Yeah, well, what happened was I think the house was raided. So obviously the people would have made this report. The house was raided immediately. The computer seized everything and they found, I mean, they weren't only being done for filming kids, they were being done for rape. They were set free till their first court hearing. And between that court hearing, they were out on bail. So they called me and my mum to their house and they split us off. And my abuser that day swore me to secrecy and, you know, put it on me. And I just made a deal with myself that day. You know, I don't come from a single parent family. My dad was an ex-copper himself. You know, there was no one I could talk to. There was no one I could tell about this. And I remember exactly where I was standing, where I was looking when I made a promise with myself to take this to my grave.
So let me just get this bit clear. There'd been this case, all of that had happened, and you weren't part of it apart from to write a letter to say that you had not been abused by these men.
Yeah.
And then years passed. So the trial just ended. They were not convicted. They got away with it. And then years passed. You had your own child. You suddenly realised you needed to do something about this. And that's when you contacted the police yourself to try to generate your own statement and to bring it back up again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I was never going to talk about this.
Mm. I'm so glad that you have. I'm so glad that you have. And I know what sparked it off was that you had a little boy yourself and you suddenly realised how vulnerable children are and how there's no fucking protection. And none of this was your fault and none of this was your mum's fault. And none of this was anyone's fault apart from the men who decided to abuse you and all those other boys. But what I find 1,000 times worse and more disturbing is that after all of that, the trial was a hung jury, not guilty. But even worse, we know that these two men are to this day, on this day, are still working with young boys.
Yeah.
Somebody might be listening right now whose child is in a stage school with these men. And the system is set up in such a way that the perpetrators are more protected than anyone.
Absolutely.
If I say their name, I could get sued. Yeah. If you say their name, you could too. And at the moment, what you're trying to do is open this up for reinvestigation so that you can take them to trial for what they did to you. But at every turn, you are stifled and you are hampered by what you can say. In case you fuck this up, in case one thing you say means that they can never be investigated or go to trial again.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, every single day, it is likely that they are abusing more children and getting away with it.
At one point, the police asked me to prove they were still working with kids. And I was like, you're the investigators. I can go on Google within 5 minutes and come back and find evidence that both these men are in and around children, that they are in a workplace with children. I can prove it within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And after 5 years, the police have come back to me and asked me that question. Like, they asked me it again in my complaint process. And the police tried to shut me down. They tried to close my case down a few times throughout my investigation. Like, I had to have my ISVA, my legal advisor from Survivors ISVA UK.
ISVA is Independent Sexual Violence Advocate, who works with victims to speak for them, basically, or help them through these kind of difficulties.
Yeah, so the police NFA'd my case.
NFA is no further action.
Yeah, and I waited like 5 days, just like cried it out for 5 days, essentially. And then I contacted my ISVA and said, oh, the police have closed my case. And he was like, can I talk to them? And I was like, okay. And then he sent them this thing about how they're not allowed to close cases like that. They haven't followed protocol. They're essentially illegally closing my case. They're not following the 1994 legislation, all of this stuff. On the fifth day, he sent them an email telling them what they'd done wrong. And the next morning, I got an email saying, we've just reopened your investigation. I have now found all of the evidence and everything that surrounds this case and the old investigation. I was like, hang on a minute. So 6 days after you've closed my case, you're still looking into my case. Mm. No, that's weird. Like, that's weird. No, you haven't. Mm. Like, what's going on? They've never taken my statement. They've not made sure they ABE'd me. I've got it on...
ABE is Achieving Best Evidence Interview, which is a video that you do with vulnerable victims and children by video.
Yeah, so the police officer was told by his sergeant, I've got it on record now on paper, to make sure that I was interviewed, I was ABE'd. They have to do loads of planning. They have to have written evidence of their planning before my video interview. They have to liaise with the CPS. Yeah. He didn't open my notes until the morning of my video interview, and then he cancelled my video interview because I'd given this little summary thing, which should never have been used.
So ultimately, where is it at now? You are in a place where your complaint has been upheld against the police.
Yeah, the MAPAC, the Mayor's Office for Police Conduct, have upheld. So the police tried to shut down my complaint. I asked for a review. The Mayor's Office reviewed my case. That took, I think, about 2 years from the original complaint for the Mayor's Office to uphold it. Then that went back to the Department of Professional Standards, the PSU. They have now come back and told me that the service provided was unacceptable. So they didn't take my statement. They cancelled my video interview. They didn't video interview me, which is evidence. And he never looked for evidence in the case. He never looked. The police officer never searched to see if there was any still records of me being on film or if they're filming children right now. They have not done their job. Mm. They haven't done anything.
All right.
So I'm now at the point where my investigation is likely to be reopened and started again.
And what would be really amazing is if we had some of their other victims come forward. And that's the really important part, I think, of this podcast. So firstly, if you or anyone you know went to any stage schools from any point, I guess late 80s, no, maybe early 90s to today, if any of this rings a bell to you and you think you may have been a victim or you think you may know somebody who could have been a victim, send them this podcast. I'm happy for people to DM me and DM me repeatedly until I see it. So if you think that you are a victim and you think that you may know who these suspects are, say it to me and I will be able to confirm that for you. Obviously, I can't say their names, but if you get the names right, I will let you know and then I will link you up with the other victims. If you do have children in stage school or in football camps or who are going to Sunday school at the church or having private tutors or any of these areas in which you have that toxic combination, I guess, of very trusting parents or parents who really want their kid to get somewhere. And it's that toxic combination with that power and access. Paedophiles will choose industries in which they can have power and access to children. So be really, your kids don't have to be in stage school for you to be really on point with understanding how these risks present. And that's why I really want to get away from this notion that paedophiles are monsters. They're not monsters. They're the nicest man you know. Mm-hmm. They're that man who is doing everything for you and your family and your kid. I keep saying man because that's predominantly what it is. It can be women too. Signs of sexual abuse can be things like bedwetting, physical changes, sometimes weight gain, sometimes weight loss, problems with sleeping. Sometimes with children, you might find your child wants to go to that place all the
time. They will want to.
So you might think, oh, well, she really wants to go to school every day or she really wants to go to ballet class every day. Nothing bad can be happening there. Sometimes there can be a sense of safety and a sense of a relationship with the abuser. Again, the child doesn't realise that that's not okay. Things like gifts, coming home with gifts and money and things like that.
I now, as a parent myself, this is the reason why, you know, I am the statistic. It takes men, I think, on average, 23 years to come out and talk about the abuse they've suffered. And it only really happens if they've had a child of their own. That's what happened to me. I've freaked out. How do I protect my child if I still know there's paedophiles out there? How can I protect my child if I'm not honest about what's happened to me?
Yeah.
You know, I now don't want to let my kid go and stay at someone's house. Yeah. I find that really, really hard. And I know that I am going to, you know, I'm going to give him a harder journey through life if I don't go through life trusting people.
Sex education for children is so important because so many young people don't even realise that what has been happening to them is not normal and is abuse until they go to school and they hear that actually this is just something you're supposed to do with a partner that you're in love with, that you've consented to do this with. So I really think from so young, our kids need to know every name of every body part and they need to be comfortable with saying them out loud. They need to know what is good touch, what is bad touch, what is abuse and what is not abuse. I think we have to educate them so young so that you would have had those words the second that you went into that house. You should have known, this is not what adults and children do. My penis is not for anybody else. And I'm going to tell my mum the second I leave here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really just want to end this on saying, please get in contact with us if you think you may have been a victim by these men. I will help to connect you to connect the victims together. Thank you. I know that was really difficult for you. It's a hard thing to talk about, but also I want us to normalize talking about this as well. Like, you know, the more people that feel confident and able to say, yeah, I was abused and it wasn't my fault and I've got nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about, the better. I love you.
I love you too. Thanks. I really do.
La la la, let me explain. This has been a Sony Music Entertainment production.